Summer 2008, Waterloo, Canada. Mike Lazaridis stands inside a small lab with concrete floors and exposed pipes. Wires hang from the corrugated steel ceiling. This is the place where Research in Motion puts its products through wacky experiments. He watches as an industrial-sized tumbler is filled with the latest BlackBerry model. A member of the quality control team starts talking.
So at this station, we're testing the phone's ability to withstand horizontal impact.
Lazaridis nods. The phone currently being tested is the Storm, RIM's all-glass touchscreen device. He's got a lot riding on this model. It's supposed to be RIM's answer to the iPhone. The phones inside the tumbler fly into the air and smash into the edge of the containers. Lazaridis winces, but isn't too concerned.
You expecting people to be putting their phones in blenders or something?
The employee gives him a look.
Well, other BlackBerry models survived that test, but
Lazaridis cuts him off.
What other tests are you doing?
The employee leads him to the next station.
Here we have the vertical drop test.
A handful of Storm models are being held above the floor by robotic arms. The quality control employee presses a button. The phones drop to the unforgiving cement floor. Every single one of them shatters. Lazaridis steps closer for another look. He frowns as he stares at the shards that litter the floor.
Oh, this looks bad.
BlackBerries are known for being indestructible. They were made with hardy metal, plastic, and QWERTY keyboards. A sales rep used to throw it on the floor to show clients how unbreakable they were. But not the Storm. This model has an all-glass face with no keyboard. Lazaridis can't believe what he's seeing. He's got a brilliant team. He's sickened to see that they created such a flimsy phone.
As you can see, the new phone repeatedly fails test grades.
Lazaridis straightens up.
Well, that's because these machines are too rough on it. These phones are going to be handled by people, not robot arms. We need to test them with real people.
The employee starts to protest, then thinks better of it.
I'll find some human test subjects.
Lazaridis walks out of the lab, confident that human users won't be anywhere near as rough as robots. But the phone does survive human fingers. Storm may have weathered this test, but dark thunderclouds are gathering on the horizon. Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. In the last episode, Steve Jobs and Apple delivered a game-changing touchscreen phone
that put email, an iPod, and phone capabilities all in one device. Now, Lazaridis and his co-CEO, Jim Balsillie, are pressing their team to come up with their answer to the iPhone. If that were the only challenge, that would be enough. But while RIM was working to match iPhone's last iteration of the phone, Apple is about to open up a new battlefront, one that RIM has not even dreamed of. This is Episode 3, App Attack. Late 2007, a large glass conference room at Apple Park in Cupertino, California. Dressed in his signature black turtleneck and jeans, Steve Jobs looks around the table at his board members.
Well, thank you everyone for being here. As you all know, we're planning to release the second model of the iPhone next summer. It'll be fully compatible with 3G, and we're very excited to make the shift. People have been loving surfing the web on our phones, and now it'll be way faster.
Yep, sounds good.
The board members nod, pleased but eager to hear what comes next. They know customers have been smitten by the iPhone because of the ease of browsing the internet on them. Browsing on the BlackBerries is slow and cumbersome.
We sold nearly 1.5 million iPhones in 2007, and we're aiming way higher with the new model.
Jobs clears his throat and then plunges in.
Now, I want to talk about apps. I always thought the killer app of the iPhone should be the phone itself, because I was so damn tired of calls dropping, and we've done that. As you know, I've opposed developers making apps for our products. I worried that apps would mess up the iPhone. But Art has been quite persistent, and I'm coming round to the idea. I want to hear what you think. I'll let Art explain his perspective.
Art Levinson, a biotech executive turned Apple board member, nods.
I've been bugging Steve for a while about apps. Honestly, the phone is a thing of beauty. But I think the future of the phone, in fact, the company, is in the apps.
The board members glance at each other. There's a fleeting feeling of worry, but mostly they're excited about what comes next. Levinson has their full attention.
I'm talking about different applications. Tools that solve problems or make using the phone more fun. Say, a map or a game. The key is to give the users applications they may not even know they want or need yet. And to do that, we crowdsource the apps.
Levinson gives them a second to absorb what he's telling them. He knows while some are keen to push boundaries, others see this as opening a Pandora's box of problems.
If we crowdsource developing apps, and by this I mean allowing other outside developers to create software, we'll expand the universe of apps exponentially.
The board members nod along as Levinson continues.
Outside developers can make all sorts of programs more than we'd ever be able to make on our own. And there's a clear demand for it. We've already seen hackers jailbreak the iPhone and start building their own apps for it. This is an opportunity to take that demand and channel it.
Some board members nod. A venture capitalist named John Doerr speaks up.
I completely disagree. We should be building the apps ourselves. Why would we allow apps to be developed by outsiders? It would dilute our brand and spawn competitors.
Levinson speaks up again.
Think of the potential scale of this thing. I'm talking thousands, maybe millions of apps. We'd never be able to reach that. I just know customers are going to love the variety, and it'll draw them to buy our phone.
Jobs nods.
They'll do things we never would have thought of. It's not like we'll just allow any app to be used. We'll make sure Apple has final say in what goes in the store. No porn or any of that stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Another board member speaks up.
You could make sure that all the apps are tested and approved by your own guys.
Jobs nods again. Another board member pipes up.
Well, you already have the iTunes store, right? Why not make a version of that, a sort of app store? That way all the apps are centralized.
Doerr frowns.
Are we just going to let them use our platform for free? I mean, we're giving them access to all iPhone users. Why would we just give away such...
Jobs interrupts.
We could charge developers or work out some sort of revenue sharing. Maybe we take a cut of any sales the app makes.
Levinson snaps his fingers.
Exactly. Think of these apps and the App Store as another revenue stream. It becomes passive income for Apple. It's a win-win for outside developers and us and the users.
Jobs has heard enough.
All right, we're officially opening up the iPhone for apps.
Despite some board members' concerns, Jobs' team quickly gets to work readying the iPhone for apps. It's another gamble. The Jobs hopes will pay dividends. March 2008, a dark auditorium on the Apple campus. Steve Jobs stands on stage with a giant image of the iPhone on the screen behind him. Also on the screen are icons of existing apps: messages, calendar, photos, camera, weather, and notes. He's just announced that the iPhone's new version, 3G, will go on sale in July. And now, he's hitting the next major news item.
So, you're a developer, and you've just spent 2 weeks or maybe a little bit longer writing this amazing app. And what is your dream? Your dream is to get it in front of every iPhone user.
But Jobs and his audience knows that the hard part is getting the app in front of users.
Well, we're going to solve that problem for every developer. And the way we're going to do it is what we call the App Store.
Just then, the screen behind him disappears. Up pops a square blue icon with a big A on it. Jobs explains that the App Store is an application written to deliver apps to the iPhone, apps that can be made by anyone, including the people sitting in his audience. By giving developers access to iPhone users, Apple will keep 30% of any revenues made by the apps.
When a developer wants to distribute their app for free, there is no charge for free apps at all. There's no charge to the user.
The crowd breaks into applause. Allowing free apps in the App Store is a huge boon for developers who want to make fun and accessible products. Having access to iPhone users is an even bigger deal. His audience is ecstatic. Before Jobs has even finished his keynote, the first patent for an app has been filed. When Apple publicly launches the App Store, developers flood it with apps. Apple's bet pays off. Now, people want the iPhone not just for ease of use, but the cool and silly apps that are catnip for users. Apps are the latest topic of conversation from late-night talk shows. Workers compare apps over the water cooler. The App Store quickly boosts sales of the iPhone. Meanwhile, over at RIM, Lazaridis and Jim Balsillie would be worried about Apple's panoply of apps if they didn't have a bigger fire to snuff out. And if they don't do it quickly, it will soon enough engulf them. Spring 2009, Verizon headquarters in Basking Ridge, New Jersey. Balsillie tugs at his collar. He looks across the table at the grim faces gazing back at him. He's here to meet with Verizon's executives about Storm, the phone they released to the public a few months ago. It was a touchscreen phone that could text, call, email, and browse the web, but it didn't have any apps. But that's the least of their problems. Verizon's chief marketing officer, John Stratton, kicks things off.
Jim, we've been experiencing sky-high returns on Storm. Users have said they found the clickable screen unresponsive, and we're hearing that it's unbearably slow.
Well, you know, some teething problems are to be expected with new technology.
Stratton's expression darkens.
These aren't just teething problems, Jim. Virtually every single one of the first batch of Storms you ship needs to be replaced. I'm talking about 1 million phones.
Balsillie's jaw drops. He knew they fumbled Storm, but he hadn't realized it was that bad. Balsillie starts to protest.
But John, come on now, that's ridiculous.
Stratton cuts him off.
You're going to make us whole on the money we've spent fixing your Storm product problems, or we'll revisit our whole supplier relationship with you. This is your responsibility. We expect you to step up because this is your fault, not ours. Balsillie balks. But he knows Rim can't survive without Verizon. Question is, whether this relationship is salvageable.
How much are we talking?
We need $500 million. Balsillie's eyes widen. A figure that big would entirely wipe out Rim's profit for the quarter. There's no way he can afford it.
I can't write a check like that. Come on now. Be reasonable. What if we offer free repairs and upgrade programs and a whole slew of complimentary Blackberries?
Stratton grimaces. It's not what he wants, but he knows that Verizon is stuck with the units it's already committed to buy from RIM. Balsillie keeps going.
Look, John, we're going to make things right and fix this with you guys. You've been great partners over the years, and we want to continue to be good partners to you.
The pair reluctantly shake hands, and RIM goes about replacing the 1 million busted phones. The fix costs RIM $100 million, but it's still better than being out $500 million. Balsillie heads back to Waterloo. Lazaridis knuckles down on developing the new and improved Storm 2. Verizon commits to selling Storm 2 because it's still in a contract with RIM. But when Storm 2 launches in October 2009, it isn't much better. RIM's sales start plummeting. In the fourth quarter of 2009, they miss their target sales goal by more than 650,000 units. No one wants Storm or Storm 2. RIM's sales figures are in a tailspin. It's spring 2009 in the Apple design studio. Johnny Ive, Apple's industrial design chief, leads Steve Jobs over to a large table covered with a velvet cloth. Ive grabs one end of the cover and whips it off with a flourish, revealing 20 different size touchscreen devices. Jobs smiles at the sleek array of devices. They're bigger than the iPhone, but not quite as big as a laptop. All of them are rectangles with curved edges, but they have varying heights and widths. Jobs picks up one of the tablets and begins swiping.
I like this one. It feels like a good size.
Ive peers over him.
Ah, yes, that's the 9.7-inch screen, a 4:3 aspect ratio.
Jobs nods. He's been meeting with Ive every day for the last few months to work on this new project. It takes the multi-touch technology of the iPhone into a big screen. He's calling it the iPad.
This is looking good, Johnny. How's the App Store coming along on this thing?
Ive picks up a different size device and navigates to the App Store icon.
It's great. I think people are going to love using apps on the iPad even more. This is perfect for reading books on, drawing, taking notes, any number of work-related things.
Jobs nods. The App Store has been a huge success. By January 2009, only 6 months after the App Store launched, there were already 15,000 apps for download, and users downloaded them a whopping 500 million times. Jobs knows that apps are drawing users to the iPhone. It's only a matter of time before they bring users to the iPad.
That's good. I can see this appealing to business people and to students.
Ive nods in agreement.
So shall we go with this size then?
Jobs looks at the tablet in his hands one last time.
Yes, this is the one.
They put the iPad into production. And that spells more bad news for RIM. The iPad is perfect for making presentations in meetings. Armed with the iPad, Apple is coming after RIM's core business, companies. And that would be bad enough, but RIM is also under attack from its partner, Verizon. RIM has failed to give Verizon an iPhone killer, so Verizon doesn't put as much marketing behind Storm 2. Instead, Verizon throws money behind a phone that's about to create problems for BlackBerry and Apple.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers.
Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. January 2010, Apple HQ in Cupertino, California. Jobs strides across a stage in front of his employees, looking down and not speaking. It's the company's regular town hall. Employees are expecting to celebrate the iPad, which he just announced a few days ago to great acclaim. When Jobs lifts his head and faces the audience, he looks slightly irritated. He opens the floor up to questions. One employee raises his hand. Jobs points at him. Yes?
I wanted to ask what you made of the Android phone that Google just released.
The employee doesn't know it, but he's just touched the raw nerve that is the source of Jobs' irritation. Google's Nexus 2. And Verizon is heavily promoting the phone. They'd been hoping someone would ask about it. Jobs' eyes flicker with anger.
We did not enter the search business. They entered the phone business. Make no mistake, they want to kill the iPhone. We won't let them.
Google was an early partner with the iPhone. The first iPhone came fitted with Google Maps. Now, Google and Apple have fallen out. Jobs keeps going.
We are going to deliver aggressive updates to the iPhone. Android and Google won't be able to keep up.
Another employee asks a question on another topic, and Jobs begins to answer. But he can't let Google go.
I want to go back to that other question first and say one more thing. Google's company motto, don't be evil. It's
At the moment, BlackBerry feels like it's in Jobs' rearview mirror. But Google? Well, that's another matter. They do have the engineering power and the money to put a hole through Apple. February 2010, a hotel meeting room in Barcelona, Spain. Lazaridis looks around the bland business center. He's with a slew of RIM executives and Verizon heads for the phone industry's big annual convention. Verizon had already told handset makers that it's investing billions of dollars into the latest network technology, 4G. Verizon wants its suppliers to be ready, but Lazaridis doesn't have a 4G prototype to show them. Instead, after some pleasantries, he launches into a lesson.
I want to take a moment to educate you all on 4G and the shortcomings of the technology.
I don't think Verizon can pull off its 4G plans. It'll be difficult to upgrade the network because the existing technology doesn't support it. That means suppliers will have to heavily invest to develop it.
The Verizon team exchange impatient looks. After Rim's many stumbles, they can hardly believe this is his move. Lazaridis doesn't notice and keeps going.
BlackBerry works perfectly well on 2.5G. Any upgrade to the network is costly, complex, and takes time. From a value proposition standpoint, 4G just doesn't make sense.
When he's done, Verizon's marketing vice president, Jeff Dietl, speaks up.
Respectfully, we've made our decision.
Lazaridis' brow furrows. He looks confused. Dietl continues.
I don't think you realize quite how far along we are. We will be launching 4G and heavily promoting 4G phones. It's what customers want, and it's what we're going to give them. So do you have a 4G phone to show us or not?
Lazaridis is stumped. Rim had been working on a 4G phone, but Lazaridis was disappointed in its battery power. Fearful of presenting yet another substandard product, he had stopped the project.
No, we don't. Well, then, thank you for your time.
With that, the Verizon executives get up and leave the meeting. Lazaridis realizes he's made a huge mistake. With Storm, they tried to play catch-up with Apple and failed. But by not making a 4G phone, RIM has taken itself completely out of the running. On the next episode, RIM gets a lifeline when a cheaper version of its phone begins to do well in the developing world. And to hold on to its dominance, Apple will have to fight both RIM and Google.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
From Wondery, this is Episode 3 of BlackBerry vs. iPhone for Business Wars. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they are based on historical research. I'm your host, David Brown. Natalie Robomed wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Sound designed by Kyle Randall. Our producer is Dave Schilling. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.